being a writer is so solitary. And you have good days and bad days. And some days you're on fire. And some days you're like, why bother? Imposter syndrome. Who am I? Why am I writing? And so it's when you have other people are like, are you out of your mind? Are you not going to drop an episode? I pulled over the side of the road to read it. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Then I'll get right back on that. So they're like, so when something happens at the nightclub, then I make a little promo that says nightclub is closed. And then they're like, oh my gosh, and what happened in the episode is the reason why it's closed. And they're putting it on their Instagram. I'm trying to hit all the feels and make it feel as real to them as I can. And it's the escape, but it's also the fantasy. And it's also your passion will show if you are also excited about your story as well.
Welcome to Subscriptions for Authors. Meet your co-hosts, Michael Evans, sci-fi thriller author of a dozen novels, and Amelia Rose, a semi-romance author that makes six figures per year in subscriptions. Together, we will help you make more money with subscriptions and succeed in the future of publishing.
I'm so excited for this one. Welcome to this podcast, everyone. Welcome to Subscriptions for Authors. We have Verica with us here today, Verica Sloan, who is such an incredible person. We met Verica, me and Amelia, at Sony Books 2022. So actually quite a while ago. And when attending one of Amelia's keynotes, she just got inspired to start a subscription and to go down this path of serialization. And it's gone really well. She started on Radish to be able to get thousands and thousands of readers there, and now is doing really well in her subscription. And she's going to talk about her entire journey. But what I also want to share with you all today is that there's a really unique and cool opportunity for you all to actually grow as serial authors. Amelia created the 1 Million Read Serial app, which is designed to help you start writing serials and get to your first 1 million reads, all learning from Amelia, who has 70 million plus story reads online. You can find the link to join season of the lab down below. And I hope you enjoy this podcast because Verica is truly like an incredible human being. She's so far, so bright, and just has so many great insights. So hope you guys enjoy this interview and enjoy this podcast. I'll see y'all on the other side. I'm so excited to have you on today. It's been like, we go back a long time now. Actually, over a year ago, for sure, yeah. At the first time, I think it was like one of Amelia's first times speaking at a conference, and you were there at 20 Books, and I know you listened to it, and we'll talk about that story. But from there, we've kept in touch, and you've been an amazing member of the community, amazing person to have in the orbit of the subscription world. But recently, you launched your own subscription, and we're going to talk all about that, because it's gone really well. But before we do, tell us a little bit about what got you into the author world. What even brought you to showing up to a conference, showing up to Amelia's talk of all talks? What kind of brought you into the room to even be interested in subscriptions? Because I know you've been thinking about doing it before you launched for about a year.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. I started in publishing like 2007, 2008. So self-publishing is like a zygote at that point. And I was not interested in it at all. I wanted to be traditionally published. I wanted to Avon, Harlequin. I wanted to be like on a shelf in Target. And then I realized that I wasn't really ready. So I started like small press publishing. They gave me contracts for 6 books, like in a shared world anthology novellas, just to get my feet wet. And then when I was ready for a full-on novel and I was going to submit it to Harlequin and Avon, I realized that they said at the time they could take up to a year to get back to you. And that's just more than likely say no, because it's like the NFL. They take like the top 1%. And so I was like, okay, so I have to wait a year to hear from you about this book. And then also you can't submit to more than one at the same time. So you can't have Harlequin and Avon fighting over you. They said, no, it's me or them. And I'm like, so wait, I wait 2 years, let's say, to get a yes. And then even after that, it takes another year for them to publish it. So I'm like, that is a lot of life minutes that I am waiting on a book that I wrote 4 years ago. So I was like, okay, it's time to look into the self-publishing. So I went into that I put out like a first contemporary series, like 7 books. There's 3 novels, 4 novellas. I'm trying to get fans. And it's a series I've been wanting to write. And I didn't have any money for ads. I also work full time. And so I wasn't pounding these out. It took a few years. And so I was doing promos and getting a few reviews, but it wasn't ever skyrocketing like others did. And especially in 2012 when self-publishing was just blowing up on Kindle. So I didn't write for a little while. And then I thought, now I'm really into paranormal romance. I want to write about vampires. Way easier because you can make up your own rules and you can get as hot as you like. And so I went into that, started a 6-book novella series, cloudy thinking, because this is what happens when you make plans. I'm going to set this up, this world up, and then when everybody likes it, I'm going to write a whole novel series. This is like the prequel series, and then I'm going to novel series after that. Sure. Published that and promoted it, but again, no money for ads, and I don't know, people like it. I get a few reviews, but I'm only having newsletter subscribers because I'm signing up for newsletter builders, but I don't really have fans. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have people on my fan or Facebook page. I love your stuff. I decided to not go onto the novels for that series. And I'm obsessed with writing, right? I've been writing since I was 5. I would write entire notebooks about me and my crushes ending up together by hand. And so romance was always going to be it for me. And I'm like, but I don't know what people really like about it. I look at the reviews on Amazon and they'll say, it was great. I was entertained. Okay. But I don't know what about me that they liked or the stories. I'm a drift. I write a Nutcracker retelling romance in 6 weeks because that was on my mind. And then I wrote a full length forbidden romance vampire and 2020. And I intended to make that vampire romance a trilogy. And just, my muse left. She went to Tahiti. She went to Hong Kong. I don't know where she went, but she was gone. It was 2020. And so I just don't know where to go at that point or what I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't have a whole lot of fans. So I'm not letting anybody down anyways. 2021, I get the advice to put my backlist on Radish. Set it and forget it. Because you can't really advertise for Radish because when people look at the ad and then they're like, oh, I have to download the app, I have to sign up, and then I have to pay coins in order to read the story that she was advertising to me. No, it needs to be polar. I call it polar, path and least resistance, right? So I'm like, so you just put them on there and Radish finds the readers for you. They have the readers and they will promote your story and then that's it. And then you can make a little money on the side. So I'm like, cool, I'll do that. I put my vampire series on there. I put the contemporary series on there. And right away, I could tell that vampire series is not what they wanted, but they liked my contemporary and it was doing okay. It was nothing to like write home about, but I was like, okay, they like my contemporary voice. That's fine. Cause I don't know what voice I want to write in anyway. So about 6 months later, I take off the vampire series and I started seeing these patterns because once a month at the time, Radish used to send monthly newsletters telling you exactly what readers are looking for, the top 10 of their searches. And I noticed they were the same top 10, but like in different order. They would change order, but they were the same. And it was smut, virgin, daddy, age gap, alpha, billionaire, polyamory, spanking, bondage. I was like, okay, the same, at least for 3 months in a row. I was like, okay, so they obviously want it really hot. And they like those themes the most. And then I was like, okay, I think I have a concept like that. And what I liked about the idea of serialization was I don't have to devote a whole 6 months or a year, because that's sometimes how long it takes me to write, in order to find out that people like it. I can start now on Radish because they let you write as you go. Basically, you can do 3 times a week, 5 days a week, once a week, and just get that instant feedback and find out, is this something you're into? Also, reverse harem was on fire and I thought, okay, I can do reverse harem. And I'm like, no, I can't. I'm going to start with 2 guys instead of 3. And then I'm like, and they really like first person. And I usually write in third. And I'm like, so I'm going to I'm going to do first person instead of third. I'm only going to write from single point of view, just the heroine, because I don't think I can write from two men and her. I was like, I don't know if I can pace it. So this is an experiment. I'm going to find out. And if a couple months in, it bombs, I really haven't lost a whole lot of time or effort. So it was, let's just start it in Radish and see. And when you think about serials, because I know a lot of people poo about it, but Game of Thrones, what other, Outlander, all these shows are basically ending on a cliffhanger every single episode. And the reason why we're manic for them is because we want to know what happens next, and we want to know now. But they're piecemealing it to us week by week, at least Game of Thrones did. And even Netflix does that. They drop half of the season now and half of the season later. Like, they get it. And so, and we were getting such used to instant gratification, but watching a whole series in one weekend, you're over it. And you can still be a manic kind of fan for it, but now you're on to the next. And I like the idea of, oh my gosh, what happened? What's next? That feeds this emotion and attachment like nothing else. So if you're on the fence about serial novels, at least in romance, oh, this is how I got some pretty manic super fans, is by ending every single episode on a soft or hard cliffhanger and giving them those themes that they wanted. So I wrote a smutty, virginy, age gappy, alpha, contemporary story, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I started that in June of 2021, but it's got a few views, but it wasn't taking off. It wasn't skyrocketing by any means. And then I went to the conference, and I was really interested because I'd never really heard of what subscriptions or like Patreon or anything like that before. And so I was drawn to just something new, because everything else that I had tried to get fans, like the newsletter builders, the Facebook parties, were not working for me. I'm not a fast writer. I can't pump them out every month. So I was just like, okay, this is something new and it's super intriguing. I thought, after her presentation, and I know, I remember I fangirled all over you guys in the hallway. I remember very distinctly. Oh my God, you just blew my mind. Thinking, wow, you can have some fans that want to support you monthly for things that are not even edited, because for early access or bonus, just on you. You and you alone, because we're so used to paying one monthly price for access to thousands of hours of content. And so I was like, there's just no way someone's just going to want to pay me, just me, for my content. So I thought her story was incredibly inspiring, but I'm like, but I don't have any super fans to really sell this to. And I didn't know if I could just put it out there to my newsletter. I'm pretty sure it was a pretty cold audience that they're like, okay, like that's nice, but we just want to read your whole book. That's what I think my newsletter subscribers were going to say. They weren't going to be really responsive. So I'm like, I'm going to wait until I know I have a few fans before I do my subscription. I also want to point out that when you think about it, all the steps that you go through to publish, idea, outline, write, edit, cry, scream, bleed, cover it, market it, publish it. By the time you've published it on retailers, you're over it. You're like on to the next shiny, right? Your fans don't leave reviews, and that's great, but the story's been written. It's done. Like, I'm over it. I'm already on to either a new series or the second book or whatever. And having someone read it as you go and give feedback as you go can really motivate you more and then keep you into the same sphere as your readers. And so while they're reviewing your book that's already been published, like, that's nice, but that one's done. And I'm not going to go back and edit it. I'm not going to change anything, but thank you for your feedback. I was doing okay with that story. It was mainly I had six girlfriends that were addicted to it. They loved it. They kept me motivated. And I should have realized at the time that I was one of those authors that thrives on instant feedback and motivation, encouragement. But I still was not catching on, because I'm like, they're my friends. They're being nice. And they were genuine about it, but still, they're not my audience. Around March, so this story's been going on for 10 months, I got sick. I went on vacation. I got sick. And I was writing like 2-3 times a week. So I was dropping episodes several times a week. And then I just stopped because I was sick. Things happen. And I was like, there's hundreds of books on Radish that they can read in the meantime. I'll be back. And I didn't even live it on a cliffhanger. It had resolved the conflict and the three of them had made up. And it ended on a nice little like sexy time. So it wasn't as if I left them hanging, but I started to get DMs on Facebook and Instagram. Very worried about you, very concerned, what's going on? This isn't like you. And then I felt very guilty that I just ghosted and I wasn't ready to go back. And then once they started messaging me, I'm like, okay, so I've got 6 super fans that are like, I'm waiting and I can't wait and I love this story. Great. So I went back in and season 2, because Radish calls them seasons, but it's basically book 2. I finish it up and I get a couple comments like, love the story. This is my favorite. That's nice. But it isn't until season 3, book 3. And I put on the very first, after the very first episode, I did my first writer's note, like big writer's note, like Amelia had suggested. And I said, let's get interactive this season. That's exactly what I said. How about I put on these random polls once in a while on episodes and you guys get to vote what happens next. Now, it's not going to be like anything that changes the trajectory of the plot or anything that's going to move the plot in a different direction. Just going to be who walks in the door, where they have sexy time, where they go on a date, things like that. And I got, I think I got 40 responses, yes, in. So that told me, that gave me data right away that I had at least 40 people who were willing to interact on this app. And before, I would get 3 comments on an episode, 1 or 0, right? They were really quiet. And then I realized, oh, they're quiet because I'm quiet. I'm not writing writer's notes. I'm not saying anything to their comments, but now I am. So they're in for their random polls. I post a poll the next episode asking, who do you want to be behind the door, hero A or hero B? And it was like 90% hero A. And I was not surprised, but I'm like, wait, I love both. So I was hoping it would be kind of 50-50. So that data told me that I'm writing hero A, like he's on point. And I know why they love him. And it's because he's the broody, emotionally unavailable, harsh hero. And the other one is alpha, but he's more secure with his feelings and open and expressive. So they want the brooding guy to show up. So that's what I write. And they loved that. So they felt like they got to decide instead of me being the master, mistress of it all. And I was like, okay, I'm hooked. Because then now their comments were just like a line or two are now full on maximum word count. La 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 la, can't believe this happened. Oh my gosh, it was exactly what I wanted. Or they give feedback like, he didn't react the way I thought. And I was like, I like this. So then after that, every poll, I would get many comments. And then that activated, I think Radish should take notice of, this story is getting a lot of comments. So they started putting me like in top 10 in the community category. They have several categories. And then we're talking and we're getting more comfortable. And I think it's because I started that, of course, with the polls, but I'm not trying to think of it as a reader standpoint. When you think of reading a book or even on an app, you're probably thinking, Radish put this on here. They hired the author. They contracted them. They're putting the story out there. You don't think that it's all the writer. At least as a reader who would have no knowledge of publishing might think. And so you're not going to say, hey, this is awesome or anything like that, because you just assume it's just the app being the story being thrown on an app. But once I started making it clear that I'm a real person with feelings and a full-time job, and that they laugh at me because I'll say things like, I can't believe he just did that. And they'll be like, you're the writer. Like, well, yeah, but the characters are in charge. And they just think that's hilarious. And so we've started a rapport and it's just gotten really comfortable. Now we feel like a little community in there. And then I thought it was very interesting that someone told me, actually, I think maybe 10 people told me, you're one of the only authors that interacts on this app. And I found that shocking. And I don't know if that's true, but maybe it's just the stories are reading. But I'm like, no, they probably got the same advice I got. Set it and forget it. You put the story on there and then you don't have to, you can't market it. So just leave it alone. And I want to emphasize that at least don't do that. There are many readers on there that would love to talk to you. You are a celebrity to them. And even though that makes me cringe, but it's true. They think that you're just amazing creating this world for them. And I don't know how to express how enthusiastic and positive they are, at least on Radish. It's overwhelming. The comments that I get now, you should see them. They say the craziest things. They talk about my characters like they're real to relatives, and relatives are like, wait, these are characters in a story you're reading on an app. But husbands curse my name because they'll just start crying reading an episode that I've put them through a lot. Because it's only written in the heroine's point of view, they go through everything she goes through because they never get the hero side. So just like in real life, you have no idea what the guy is thinking or what he's up to when he's not around you. And so I think that also feeds into their emotions with this story too, is that they're always left hanging. Something is always questionable in the air. And I was like, okay, I've got some super fans for sure. And now I think I can start a subscription. So I started eyedropping the idea to them. I didn't want to just blast and say, I have one now. So I would say, I'm thinking about making a subscription where you guys can like, talk to me off the app and we can brainstorm and I can give you guys bonus content, stuff like that. I was putting out merch. What do you guys want? And they're like, bonus content, like what? And I'm like, well, oh, none of the story is written in the hero's point of view. And zilch. I'm like, what if I wrote that one scene from book one from Gage or Alex's point of view? Oh, wow. They were like, yes, because we're talking 300,000 words at this point have been written just from the female main character. And so I was like, okay, they want that. And I thought it was a little too late to do early access because I'm in the middle of a season and I didn't want to tell them, well, now you got to read it on here, but eventually be on there. So I was like, I'm not going to touch early access until I have a new season. So this is strictly bonus content. I feel like I'm just bleh, all over this right now.
You're sharing your story. I'm like, I'm here with your story.
Okay. But it's happened really fast. Started telling them about the subscription, and then we're just going to do bonus content, and that bonus content is only going to be on that subscription, and they are going to be able to vote on which scenes they want. They wanted me to write the entire books from their point of view, and I'm like, that's not possible, but I will write your most wanted scenes, and you guys can tell me what you want. I'm pretty sure I know a couple of them, but other than that, so I'm giving them more power, more feedback, and so I set up my subscription. I really agonized over the aesthetics. I really agonized, of course, over the starting price. And I started high. I just thought I was worth it. I was also offering just 3 works in progress. But I'll tell you what, they weren't really interested in the other 2 books. They're there for this book, and that's fine. And so I set it up.
For the bonus scene specifically? What's that? Were they there for the bonus scene specifically for that book, or?
Yeah, so it was going to be early access for the new season and for the bonus content. And okay. Yeah. And I was offering only what I could handle, which was like bonus scene, and I only committed to doing 1 a month. I didn't want to overcommit. And then they could get a free ebook if they did the $15. So I started at $10 a month. And that is just works in progress. That's it. So I had 3 books works in progress, but they're not interested in the other 2. They want this one. I can tell. $15 a month is all my backlist, which is like 20 titles, including my paranormal stuff and free ebook. And they get their name in the acknowledgements page. They loved that, by the way. the book just came out for this story, the first one. And I went and asked everyone, what name do you want in there? Your username, your first name, first and last name, because I wanted everyone to feel comfortable. Some people were like, just use this name. But once it came out, they were so over the moon. I was so touched because it was something very easy for me to include. And then I jumped from $15 a month to $30 a month because I thought, no way, no one's going to join that one. That's a lot. It includes a signed paperback, and I can name a side character after you, because please help me come up with names. I always have a cast of a thousand in my stories. And so I'm like, if you can give me a name that I can use, I get to do whatever I want with your character. It's not going to be you. But that was a benefit. So backlist, side character named after you, the name and the acknowledgements, and then a signed paperback. That's $30 a month. And I was like, nah, no one's going to sign up for that. Someone signed up that immediately as soon as I launched, and I was so flattered. And I've clearly got super fans. I've got, I think last time I looked, 205 followers on there, and it's only been a couple months, and 40 subscribers to it. So yeah, my goal was 10 by the end of the year, but I got 10 within the first week that were not friends and family. I'm like, those don't count. Don't join it. I just wanted super fans on there. And wow, since we met, I've definitely changed everything. The subscription did, and the idea, and Amelia's ideas and suggestions. So I like to think I'm a good case study of following her advice exactly. And a story that started out as an experiment has now taken over my life and is just set my whole 2024, because I thought, when it's over though, what am I going to do? Are they going to be interested in more of my works, or is this it? Is this my star and it's going to burn out? And then I introduced a hero. He was a villain. He started out as a villain. And of course I made him too charming, too sexy. And now they want him to have his own book. So now I'm going to be able to spin off of this into his book and then hopefully keep the momentum going. But I'm going to do that all on my subscription though, or at least start it there. Because now retailers to me are last. They used to be first, now they're last. Just like Christopher Hopper said, they don't care. They are just a platform. And in the beginning, that was the only platform that you could use to sell your books and get discoverability. And now you can't get discovered unless you're paying for them to, you know, advertise for you. So start on your own. Work on yourself. I'm trying to think of the way to say it, but retailers are last to me. Yeah, the book will be on Amazon someday, but that's not my only focus anymore. And it's so freeing and it's so amazing. And now my fans aren't just these reviews on Amazon who I can never talk to, who I can never thank. I'll get the most amazing 5-star review on Amazon, but that's nice. But I'll never know who that is or how they found me. Amazon will never give me that data. And so having a subscription gives me access to all of that. I can thank them and laugh with them and reward them anytime I want, whether they're subscribing or following or they're just a fan. I have access to them, and that's, for someone like me, that's the best part, is having my own sphere with my fans who love my writing, and they let me know and they give me feedback. And now my world's completely changed as a writer. I had no idea that the story would evolve to what it is, but it has. And I've got some serious addicts. They let me know every episode. I drop it and they're like, when's the next one? I'm like, you guys know when the next one is. I work. And until this is my full-time job, I'm doing the best I can. But every episode, they always say something crazy and I love it. And I'm like, now I'm addicted to it. It's my dopamine. So I'm thriving on their feedback. Sometimes they come up with better ideas. They'll be like, oh, I totally thought this was going to happen. And I'll be like, that was better. Yeah.
The journey.
The
journey is incredible. I want to dive into some areas a little bit more, because just to now circle back context wise for everyone. So at a timeline, you started in 2007 to 2008. That's when you started your career.
Yeah.
you were still writing romance back then, you're still writing romance now. Subgenres have changed, steaminess mm-hmm. level might vary, story to story, but you've always been a romance author. Then you all along kept publishing, nothing really hit. Then 2020 comes around, you're at a low point in terms of just motivation, creativity, and someone tells you soon after, moving into 2021, hey, there's this new platform, look, there's Radish, just put your stories there. You do that, and still nothing happens. To the most part, not really a ton. Then we're now in 2022, end of 2022, which is now just, I'm saying this just so people understand that, like, the long arc of it. You're now 14 years in. You listen to Amelia's talk, and she starts getting you thinking of differently about subscriptions, community, serialization. You're like, all right, I'm gonna give this a real shot now.
Yeah.
This year, first season goes up on Radish. Second season goes up on Radish. Third season goes up, and you really then start trying to build relationships with your fans more intentionally, involving them in your story. Then it takes off. Then you have your subscription. That's the timeline.
That's it. Yeah. And
all that's happened mostly in the last 6 to 8 months in terms of the actual growth.
No, actually, June 2022 is when I started that one.
Okay, so Radish, they started season one.
In June 2022. And then it was getting a few views, but I was going on the motivation of my friends. They were the ones encouraging me. 6 months into it is when I went to the conference and saw the subscription for authors. And then I got sick. And so I'm already into like season two by the time I realized, oh, I have a couple of super fans, I'm going to finish it up. And then I'm like, now that I know I have six, I keep saying the word six, but I'm pretty sure it's six fans for season three, I'm going to ask them to participate with me. Then I realized I had more than just six. I just
and
had
that, when did you start publishing season three?
June of this year, 2020.
Wow. So yeah, it all has happened in the last 6 years.
Yeah, so yeah, the whole explosion has happened. Like it started in 2022, but the whole... Right. It leaped.
And then you have had how many views/reads?
So June 2022, when I started the book, until April of 2023, I got 300,000 views, which sounds like a lot. But on Radish, there's people with 500 million. So it's a blip. But once I started, and this is exactly how this happened, once I started doing the polls, interacting, talking to them, I mean, I comment on negative or positive comments. I try to always spin the negative into a positive. Someone says, it's usually a negative, meaning you're not fast enough. I wish the whole book was done. I can't believe this. I can't read anymore, blah, blah, blah. I'm so sorry. I'm not full-time author. I have a full-time job. And I try to be like, but please hang in there. But you can always wait until the book comes out. Once I started talking to them and turning, so that, let's say there's 30 comments. And if I add a comment, then it's 60 comments. And then on Radish, to them, they're like, people are talking about this book. And so they're putting me on the main page. And that's because Radish has changed a lot. They don't do promos anymore. And so I went from 300,000 in April. And as of today, I'm at 2.1 million. So it took me 10 months to make 300,000 views. And then look, I quadrupled the views once I started interacting with them. And so I don't know how other platforms are like, but with Radish, that was the...
Well, I think it's important because you're sharing... I agree completely with what you've done, and it makes sense why it worked. But just where my insight's coming in terms of, I think, why it's working, it's not necessarily because there are more comments. Because if there were more comments, if you want to like think about how... That would be very easy to gain. Think about if I wanted to gain engagement from a comment perspective, then the idea would be just spam comment, right? You could have bot farms take over very easily. So what's really happening, and it's really cool, is that you commenting is actually leading to your readers reading more and your readers sharing your story more. And then that's obviously leading to, yes, the algorithm pushing you. But the real behavior that's happening is you're building a parasocial relationship with your readers. And that's keeping them more invested in your work. So they're going to read chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. What is writers really seeing? What do they really want? They don't want comics, they want money. And this is every platform. Every platform wants you to make money. They want to make money, right? So like that's how you have to think about any platform. You're like, how am I gaming the system? It's like, no, you're not. You're trying to make more money. How do you make more money? Find a better experience for readers. And you've already been thinking this. I love your POLAR acronym in terms of reducing friction with readers, but I think what was happening, and I wouldn't know because I'm not all your readers' heads, but I'm thinking they're more invested in your work. They literally, imagine you would want to pay to unlock that next chapter. You would want to stick around when you voted on what you're hoping happens next, in a sense, right? The setting, the specific, right? Then they're seeing readers stick around for a long time, continuing to read chapter for chapter. When income goes up per reader, they go, wow, how can we generate more revenue? Let's just show it to more readers. And those readers themselves go, hey, I'm already spending money on this book and I love it. Yeah. You got to come in.
Yeah.
It's that fortuitous cycle, which is incredible. And now they're on your subscription, which I wanted to ask in terms of like your subscription and Radish, in terms of just if there's a pie of 100% month over month right now, where is your subscription at in terms of your like net revenue? Like how, what percent is that? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 25% roughly? Because your subscription's done really well. It's launched great. But what do other authors expect? Like they're already gaining discovery. They have this audience. Now they want to provide more. Are they going to double their income overnight? Is it going to be 25%? Are they going to 10x their income? Probably not 10x. And I pretty much know that answer. But I don't want to like ever promote anything falsely to people, right? Like, you could 10x your income overnight. That'd be crazy. But what has it actually done for you since you've launched over the last couple months?
Okay. So like on Amazon or retailers, I'm making enough for a nice lunch, maybe. But the subscription, I'm making four figures now on Radish, which is the most I've ever made anywhere. But for this subscription, like in terms of monthly, it's 40% of my, I'm sorry, I'm not very good at numbers. So I'm trying to think of how to say.
So I think I know what you're saying. Is it 40? It's 40% of your net income. So if you were to theoretically make, and you're not making this, I'm using this number. If you made 10 pennies a month, you're making a lot more than that, but I'm using this because it's the example, 4 pennies would be coming from your subscription. Is it that?
Yeah. Or something else? Yeah, okay. It is for 40%.
That's pretty interesting because that means then like the subscription has increased your total revenue by quite a bit. When you add that, it's 40% now, but that means the whole thing's increased by a lot. And that means overall, like you've really grown a lot this year when you put your growth of the zero platforms with the scriptures combined, which is amazing. So I have a few questions for you, but what I want to do is I had 5 takeaways that I had from what you shared, 5 lessons that I had, but I don't actually want to share my takeaways, at least at first. I want to ask you, from this whole journey that you share with us, if you had to give 3 lessons that you've learned that you want to share with other authors, what would those 3 lessons be?
Concerning the whole
journey you shared, because this whole arc is, it's really inspiring to have someone keep at it for so long. You said yourself, Amazon's lunch money, which it's been lunch money for me too. It's not anything to write home about, you know, hey, it's something, right? It's something.
Right.
Now you're finding a degree of success that this isn't just something anymore. Like you're actually able to turn this into a serious side hustle. We're at definitely the bona fide side hustle point now, which is huge. That's huge. A lot of people, like myself included, like if that was all writing ever was for me, and I actually was able to make a side hustle so that it could cover all the expenses of it, I could maybe work a little bit less of my job, which I'm perfectly happy with Ream, by the way, guys. But just thinking very long term, or even if I wasn't in the position with Ream that I was in, I'd be super happy with that. So I think like when people listen to this, they're like, you're already in a position right now that people would love to get to. So the 3 lessons just on your overall journey, doesn't have to relate to descriptions. We'll dive into descriptions soon. What would be your 3 lessons that you've learned? 3 life lessons from America, 3 author life lessons that you would want to share with others to hopefully help them get to where you are right now. And you're going to keep growing, and I believe in you on that. But just recognizing the success you already have.
Well, again, there's...
I know, 3 is hard.
It's hard, but not. Like I said, there's a lot to be learned along the way. I'm trying to think of, I wish I would have just started interacting from the very beginning. And I know that for, at least for creators, that's not something you really want to do because a lot of us are introverts. I'm extroverted, but but as a writer, I'm pretty introverted. Like I put my things out there and I'm like, do you like it? Is it okay? I don't want to hear it if you don't. I guess a lesson to be learned is that if you have an idea and you don't want to devote your entire year to it or month to it, to just start putting it out there now, it's a good case for starting a subscription, which I know you said you weren't going to talk about subscriptions, but it is really great to get instant feedback. So we live in an instant gratification world, and no matter what platform you're going to put it on, you know, Wattpad, Radish, Royal Road, or what genre, find out right away if that's worth investing your time into it, because obviously there are books that you put out and even the most successful authors are like, that didn't do well. And I'm surprised because I loved it. Because you loved it. However, like the audience out there, they're clamoring for something else. And there's something to be said about giving the fans what they want. And I know a lot of authors are going to groan about that. And I did too, the whole writing to market cliche. But you can also write to market, but still give them what they want to market, but still write what you want to write. So that story, I was like, two hot professors are intelligent and successful, and a student accidentally sends them her fan fiction. And I'm like, immediately there's a humiliation and they're like, oh my gosh, that would be so embarrassing. And then, but they're two hot professors. I'm like, that's a fantasy that maybe for some people. But I'm still putting in the story that I wanted to write inside of it. So you can still write to market, but what you want to happen in the story. And then you'll be so surprised as you write. For instance, I learned a lesson. I love angst. I like drama. I love it. And I would write all this drama and put my readers through it. And then I would give them a couple episodes, a break, where it's just straight romance and good times. And then I'll write in the comments, okay, so it's time to go back to the, they got to go home. They got to figure this out. And they'll be like, no, more romance, more of that. And so, oh, I did that. I gave them like another 3 episodes of what they wanted. And that is just something that you don't get in a lot of entertainment, right? You go to a movie and you're like, there's a whole series on YouTube about how it should have ended. And it's like, what if fans could actually give their feedback as they're making the movie and make it better? I was just say better, just make it more of what you realize that the story should go and as a majority. And wouldn't that be cool? So don't be afraid to tap into that. Start experiment with the story to see if it's something that readers are going to like. Just like I said, this is an experiment. I had no idea this story was going to take off the way it did at all. And even though it did take some time, but that's because I waited a while to rope them in. It wasn't until season 3, book 3, that I did that. Maybe if I'd have done it from the beginning, it would have taken off sooner. But it wasn't until I started interacting with them and including them in the process that, like I said, it quadrupled in the views because people were getting very invested into it and because they felt like they were helping decide things. And another thing is that when it comes to the polls, I did not offer an option that I wasn't prepared to write. I wasn't saying A, B, or C, and then really hoping they don't choose C. No, I was like, I'm willing to write these 3 things. You pick your favorite, your majority. But the lesson is don't be afraid to experiment with the serial and to see the instant feedback might help you, motivate you to keep going. This story now is 500,000 words. It's enough for 5 books. I thought I was going to end it hundreds of thousands of words ago, but they won't let me. And when I say, oh, it's ending, are you guys ready? They're not ready. They cry and they scream and they beg. And so I'm like, okay. And I want them happy. I want happy fans and subscribers. And I guess I don't know how many lessons. Have I given 2? I think I've given 1.
You've given actually, I think I distilled the 3 core lessons that you shared.
Okay, good. Into like really you're listening.
Framework. Because I think this could be helpful to people because the 3 lessons that I got from you were to interact with readers, experiment, figure out what your readers want, and write that. And I feel like what you found and what you have working for you is that these three big lessons are working in perfect harmony, and you've actually built a flywheel of sorts. You've built a feedback loop that's going to keep working for you. So the first thing you did is experiment. And the key thing is that we're all experimenting when we put a story out to the world. But what you've done, and I think it requires, it's a benefit to serial fiction, and it's a just a benefit in general to a different mindset, which is if you're investing, you know, a year into a story to write a full story, all of a sudden you can only experiment once a year, which to be honest, like a lot of people listening, when they're listening to like your progress as an author, like just to make it any point, it's great. But a lot of people are like, I'd love if I didn't have to wait 15 years. And the truth is that you're still going to have to wait a while. It's not going to happen overnight. But maybe if you're able to decrease the cycle time of your experiments, right? If it took a year to run an experiment and learn something, what if you could do it faster? What if you're able to get that same learnings you would have had after a year, 3 months? It doesn't mean the same readership or growth. We're not even worried about it. We're just worried about learning, which comes to something that I think you have implicitly, but you haven't shared it like this. But this is one of my five takeaways from you, which I'll share at some point, because I have five takeaways from your story. One of them is putting readers first, right? But putting readers first is different than caring for them or any sort of lovey-dovey thing. It practically, what putting readers first means is saying, as an author, we don't actually know what our readers want. We don't actually know maybe even who our readers are, but we definitely don't know what they want. And we want to figure that out and give them that. And that is a really, like, when people say write to market, because I know when you were saying write to market, I could hear and see almost the hesitation using those words, because for some, it's kind of a weirdish rap in the community in terms of what write to market means. And this is a good thing. But the thing is, and when people listen to this podcast, they never get the normal write to market advice. And I'm not the normal write to market guy, but I also will never say writing to market is a bad thing. It's actually, if you're not writing to a market, like, what are you doing? The thing is, write to market has got connotated with a number of tactics and ways of operating that make it really difficult, because writing to market, when you then go and write a full book based on the market, assumes that you understand the market. It assumes that you know what the market wants. And here's the thing, if anyone knew that, or there was any way to actually figure that out, they would be a billionaire, because they would have dominated the whole book market. They would have figured it out, right? The thing is, creative markets are very imperfect. Very imperfect. So we're not going to actually know what are people interested in. What is the thing that it's going to hit? You don't actually know. So you have to go in with this sort of humbleness. And as writers, a lot of times we say our writing sucks, right? Like we'll always brag on ourselves. But that's not really productive. Like, I want you to feel like I'm going to write a great story, and I can write a great story and put it out in the world. But I also do want you to think in that second thought of, I don't know what the best story is. I don't know what should be in it. I don't know what really my readers are actually looking for. But I have an idea, and that's the experiment which you've been doing. But then what you've done, the genius part and the second step, and this was your second lesson, is the interacting with readers. Because that's how you start to learn, which is your third lesson, to market, figure out their interest. But you're doing all that, and then you're experimenting again in that next chapter, learning more about interacting with them, figuring out now, and I'm taking those learnings into place, and then experimenting more. And I just think it's like this unbelievable feedback loop, and that you're working with. Like, you've now taken that mindset in. And if others walk away with something, hopefully, however you want to experiment, you might be experimenting in a different genre, might be experimenting with different stories, but hopefully you can do that. Your last part too, on like, what are your values? What do you want to do? Like, you don't have to compromise everything for the experiment. It's right. Also totally true, because it's like, why should you run an experiment that you don't even want to do in the first place? Why should you rule the world as a storyteller? You don't have to do that. And you're probably going to be able to find at some point the intersection between what readers want and what you want. And you're going to be learning more and more always. I think it's beautiful. But there's one thing too that I just want to share before we dive into descriptions, that I think people might feel today by listening, because one of my things is like, okay, Verica, I like love the interacting with your readers, but you're right, a lot of people are like, I do not want to interact with readers at all. And the concept that feels, it feels icky. But the thing is, like, interact with your readers, when you like open up the world to them, when you open up your world to them, you can learn. And that is the whole point of what you kind of share. That's work for you. But if you're uncomfortable being, when we think of interacting with readers, we often think it's us sharing our personal life or us being like, hey, y'all. So it doesn't have to be that way. If you're trying to figure out like what is the best way for you to interact with readers, I haven't mentioned this in the podcast yet, but we developed a basically a personality quiz. It's called authorpersonas.com. If you take that quiz, this is literally what this was designed for. Interacting with readers is important. Figuring out what they want is important because you're going to be able to create a better story. And you're going to be able to put your readers first and build a better business, right? That's what it's about. But how do you actually interact with them? Your persona. So if you take the author personas quiz, it's totally free. Y'all can go down in the description and find it.
Oh, I took that.
What were you?
Moonstone.
Okay, I was going to say 100% you were a garnet or a moonstone. You're a moonstone. Perfect. I just knew it. So you're probably not ever sharing your personal life with your readers, I would imagine.
I have not. I was going to say that. I'm like, it's always about this story. Unless I have to tell them I'm on vacation or I'm sick, they don't know if I have pets. They don't know anything. Yeah. No.
You know, I got to take the personas quiz. It's going to help you figure out how you should approach it. And moonstone and garnets are very interrelated, especially in romance, because so much of romance is character driven anyways. But anyways, if y'all don't know what I'm talking about, just take the quiz because that'll help. Because it's when you hear people like Verica, who are incredible, giving this amazing advice, sometimes it's hard to feel like, how do I apply this to my life? And I think that's a useful tool. But yeah, you're amazing, Verica. I really am so impressed. And I want to talk about your subscription as our last thing here, because I've learned so much from you.
Really? Good.
You're honestly the first person we've had in this podcast who really is a case study that, like, what Amelia is talking about, even though, yeah, the Wattpad algorithms have changed. Like you said, the Radish algorithms have changed. Like, the world's different than, like, when Amelia got started 4 years ago, right? You're the proof that it can work. It does work for people.
Yes.
Adopting a similar mindset.
Like I said, I was basically at zero. And we're talking about books that were in 2015 that I was making on Amazon, you know, not advertising or really promoting. But I wasn't excited about them anymore. So I didn't want to advertise about them. My voice has changed. I don't write in third person anymore. So I didn't want to market books that people like love. And then they realize she doesn't even write in third person, or she doesn't even write contemporary anymore. Now I do again, but so it's like I started from scratch. Like I said, I didn't know my brand, and now I know my brand is very emotional. My readers love the emotion. They say they go through all of the emotions in one episode. I write long episodes too. I try to get their coins worth on Radish, 3,000 to 6,000 words an episode now. That's also because they motivate me to the point where I want to take them on an entire journey on one episode and not just the whole entire book. And it's more obvious to me now what they like, instead of just going on Amazon and seeing a review being like, such a great story that didn't tell me anything, that other than the fact that I wrote a great story, which is wonderful. But now I get very specific feedback, and now I know what I am great at and what I'm not so great at. And that really helps me customize the story and what people outside or readers outside of Radish, whether they like it or not. And then this sounds weird, but doesn't matter to me. My super fans really matter to me. It would be wonderful if random strangers on Amazon loved the story too, but it's not vital to me as it used to be. Because I can't, no matter what, it's on Amazon now, I can't talk to those people. And that bums me out. So I want to be able to interact with the ones that I can. And so it's like I said, the retailer is now last place. And my subscription and my cereal is first. And it's overwhelming and amazing. And now I can't go back to who I used to be. I can't go back and not get that instant feedback, not talk to my readers as I'm writing it, not get there and have them vote on what's going to happen. I want all of that now. And I have to have it now.
The voting is genius. And there's a few authors who have done this. And it's really, like, why it works, because people might be, like, listening to this. I know the common thing, like, when people, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't vote. Why would other people do it? And then you're living proof that people do it. So it's like, okay, maybe I will listen now. Which, fair. In terms of the why, you have to think about, like, what do readers really want? Like, why do people read? We say entertainment, but what does that mean? Like, we want to be entertained. Is something happening? Entertainment is not a feeling. You don't ever say,
right,
I'm feeling like I'm in a state of entertainment right now. There's something else happening. And ultimately, feelings are fleeting. So you don't actually ever want to serve necessarily a feeling either. Like, is it right. In terms of...
Right.
So if they're not coming there for one feeling either. They're feeling a lot of things. So what are they actually doing? They're solving a core human need by reading stories. That's why we do. It really makes no other sense to do otherwise, because let's be real here. From a survival standpoint, sitting down and reading a story and listening to something, like when we could be out foraging for food, we're in a different world now. But
right.
Think about evolution. There was no reason. The reason we do it is because, yeah, stories help us learn, but that's not the most obvious effect of it. It's status, belonging, and identity. Those three things. We see ourselves in stories. We see the people in the world around us, and it helps us keep that. That's huge. We feel like we're a part of something. We used to not tell stories through books. Right. We used to tell stories with people orally. That sounds really weird given the romance context, but yeah, these were oral stories. And before there was even written language, they were told among small groups of people to help us coordinate and live together. I mean, that's where stories come from, which seems like, why am I talking about that? But there's something actually quite deep-rooted in our psychology as humans about actually feeling like we're a part of something. And when you get to be a part of that story in a small way, because the leader, this is also true, this is why Irene has the motto, story tells of the world. When you go back and actually look at hunter-gatherer tribes, and the ones that still live to stay, it's the most powerful people in those tribes, storytellers. Most powerful. Like, even there's the king of the tribe or the whatever the tribal leader is, but the cultural center, the real person that we turn to is the storyteller. Which is amazing. And it's why Plato said the word story tells the world comes from Plato's Republic. And he banned the poets of the kingdom. He said, storytellers rule the world. So I guess if we take them out of the kingdom, then it'll be better. But then he realized that anyone to actually rule needs to be a storyteller. So it didn't work. I guess they just rule, right? But when we think about it in this context, because again, it sounds crazy, but if we really think about it, what you're doing is allowing your readers to take and participate in the world that you are creating. You're leading it. You are the storyteller. But man, is that powerful when they get to be involved for a poll, when you give them a voice.
So
when you say, this space is for us. Yeah. It's amazing what you've done and how you've approached it and the power that you're trying to give them to making sure it's comfortable with you, because, okay, story tells the world. You don't literally rule the world. In the sense of no one actually rules the world. I don't know who does. Maybe you believe in a god or whatever. Like, whatever you believe in, not in a literal sense, whatever the big thing is, whether it's science or the rules of their god, like, we're not going to get into that discussion here. But in that moment, you are the one who's leading that community. And, yeah, I just think it's amazing you've done it. And
yeah.
In terms of how you want your subscription with that community, I'm already sensing that, like, you did this in conversation with them. In the sense that you didn't want to make it feel like now I'm imposing something. You were hinting at it, but then you actually launched it. What did you do to market? Like you said, you got 10 paying members the first week. What did that like rollout look like? It's okay if it was simple. It might be pretty simple, but I want to know, what did you concretely do to get those 10 paying members?
Okay, so I was also going to add that I try to immerse the reader as much as I can, and these are two things that you can do for free, which I thought was great. Josh also fed into the mania of how much they love the story because it feels more real to them. Because think about how many times you hear the book was better. Why was the book better? Because you were immersed in that. You watch the movie, a show is being put on for you. But when you're reading the book, you are the character, or you are right beside them. You smell the smoke in the air. You feel the rush of love, whatever it is, that's why the book is better. And so that's what I'm trying to do on this story too. For instance, I started a Pinterest board with all the aesthetics so that they can get a visual of what I see. This is how I think Gage looks like. This is what I think the university looks like. And so I said, you can join it and you can add your pin. You tell me what you think they look like or what the villa they stayed at looked like. And that added to a lot of it too, because that makes it feel more real, right? So I don't have a production company make a movie out of it, but we can look at nice photos on Pinterest. And then there's also a nightclub that features in the story. And I made a fake Instagram page for the nightclub, like it's promoting. I don't know how to describe it, but it's okay. This weekend, DJ Nova. This is outfit. I made this up. I make this up on Canva, and I put on there, this is a fake nightclub on a fake story. Do not, this is not a real, and they
like, don't actually go.
Don't look for this place. It doesn't exist. It's not in New York. But, and it's not like I have a ton of followers on those, but they make it, makes it more real to them. So as you can make it more real, which a lot of people do with artwork, right? Artwork, merchandise, things that they can touch, things that they can see other than just reading. Like Radish is on an app. It's on a phone. And so it's not a book yet. It is now the first book, but the more you can go outside of that, I think the more people get even more emotionally attached to it. And I think that contributed a lot to that as well. So I'm sorry, what was your question? Because I know I just went off.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You didn't answer it, but that's also fine. That was beautiful.
I like to add that though, that I'm like, a couple other platforms that are free, cost me nothing, also added to that, it makes it feel real to them. So real. Yeah. And
no, this is so important. And I think I'm actually absolutely loving this conversation, mainly because this is definitely one of my favorite podcasts. I do this selfishly. I just like talking to people. And it's a benefit that other people get
to
listen.
It's my day. Thank you.
I have enjoyed this so much because you just get it. You get it. Like when you're talking, probably someone face that when you're talking about, it's about the immersion. It's about like, why is the book better? Because I was actually just having this conversation today because a lot of people, because I based with like obviously the technology world, the author world, In many of my conversations, some people will say, especially in the technology space, books are looked at like very weird, like a weird stepchild. And so why are you doing books? Like, couldn't Ring also be like a movie platform and a video game platform, like all these different things? Wouldn't those be like bigger markets, quote unquote? Wouldn't that be better? And like, my answer isn't as like high and noble as like, I love books, they're the best thing ever. Like it's true, I really love books, but I think it's something else that I really go back to, which is that the people who read books aren't the same people who watch movies. They aren't the same people who build video games. And I'm not building for them. Because you have to build for a person at the end of the day. That's not who we're creating for. And so why are there people when, objectively, movies are more immersive? I think we're talking about immersion. Movies are more immersive than books from a textile, experiential standpoint. There's more to grab onto. Video games are the most immersive. We're talking about holes. Imagine getting someone control of your world. When you actually look at all these other industries, which are really interesting, is that people don't realize how big the video game industry is. The movie industry is big, but video games are about 4 to 5x bigger.
Yeah.
In terms of the total net revenue. And books are tiny compared to this. But not in a bad way. This isn't the book industry small at all. Like it's huge and way big enough for all of us. Like no worries there. But again, like why do people read it all is a valid question. Why do people read it all? And nonfiction, let's just take off because yeah, maybe it's more easy to access something through audio or you're a better text learner. Why do people read fiction when they could literally do anything else, which is like a weird question to ask because we're just all naturally assume this, but there's people all the time who say young people aren't reading. Before Book Talk, it was like young people don't read. It's BS. Book Talk showed us that, but it's like,
yeah, right.
But like for real though, like this is the constant thing we feel as authors, and hit the nail on the head. You hit it on the head. It's about the relationship we have to characters, but more specifically, because I like obsessed over this like last year. Because I was like, I just like went through this phase where like actually I don't have a concrete first principle reason for why reading still exists. People like to do it isn't good enough. As with everything in this conversation, I'm like that isn't a good enough answer. Like we have to go deeper. So I went deeper and I found something about the brain. And I'm not gonna get into deep into the neuroscience of it because I love this shit. But the answer that I found, I'm confident in this, is that when you actually have a prose fiction that's coming from a place where like it's in your inside the mind of a character. When you let someone step inside that mind, you are able to build empathy at a level that just is not possible in any other media format. And that is so important and so crucial and is never going to go anywhere. And it's why, one, I should say I'm very passionate about just keeping bringing focus on books because there's a whole world there. But then the second thing is when you actually think socially, like, who's more in humanity, like who's more interested in actually character driven books and also who is more empathetic in general? And I'm a guy, so I can say that usually women. Guys aren't always the most empathetic. But then you look at the book market, 80% of books are bought and sold or are bought and read by women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way more gender than any other medium. Video games actually used to be male-dominated, now are almost even to females. You might think, why was it so male-dominated, now why is it more equal? I have a thesis there too, and it goes back to like all these same psychological things. Okay, men actually are more interested in gamification. That's why Peloton, not many dudes ride with Peloton. I love Peloton as like a company, as a brand. But no, that's not their target customer. The target customer is females. Everyone who buys
advertisements show men.
Almost always is both, but that is their consumer. And if you look at even see that they're reporting, like they're targeting females. That's who they want buying their products. Why? It's because Peloton's community-based exercising, getting that attachment to the instructor, getting that attachment to the class.
And who needs the community?
Dude's like, I don't want that. Instead, they want gamification. One of my professors his son started basically gamifying rowing company. All their customers are men, and it exploded because we're gamifying that. So obviously games are the definition of gamifying. Now I'm not saying women don't like that, it's just more tendencies, right? It's not like men don't like being empathetic, it's just tendencies. So why do you see certain markets by certain people's behaviors? When we go to video games, they've now become a lot more community-driven in terms of live streaming interaction. So now it's just who's dominating the community. Yes, it's still male dominated, mainly because there's all these gendered in the world is messed up a lot of times, and in terms of power structures, all that. So I won't even dive into that scenario. But now in terms of overall, who's playing games, it's even. And when we go to books, this is why community is so powerful in books, because we've identified now that women enjoy community, that they are the majority of the book market. So for everyone reading or listening to, you might be a man like who's creating books, great. I thought a lot of my readers would be dudes because I was a dude. Not true. Most of my readers are female. Most readers are female. There are genres that are male dominated. Very few. Thrillers aren't even male dominated. So when we're talking about like the market, like who we're creating for, what they're interested in, there's a lot of psychological reasons that play into what you're talking about. Which is why I'm nerding out now, because this is what I think all day about. Because like, you want to understand how it all works. So you are just doing this incredibly well, Erica. And you get it, like in the immersion factor too, you're not trying to go and spin off into Hollywood to create a more immersive experience, because you understand that your readers are there for that core immersive experience, which is your story. But you can create ancillary things around it, such as merch, such as this, such as that, that can make readers feel more a part of what you're doing, that can give people that identity. Bang, I got a shirt, I identify with that role more. That can give people a degree of belonging. Oh, we could go to a nightclub together, right? That sounds silly, but these are all the little things that can benefit your culture. So that's like why you're doing what you're doing is working. Because I know so many people listen to these things and they go, oh, let me go off and do them. And it's like, but if you don't understand why it's working, you're not going to understand how to do it. Because if you just go and look at what Barrick is doing and then try and copy it, then that never works. Right. That never works. So how can you make it work for you? You have to understand the why, which you already do and are doing. And you're now seeing that, which is just.
I know what they love about you. And they're. Our readers out there, there are billions of people on the planet. And I thought, no one is going to want to pay me monthly. I am nobody. And I was wrong. And if you think that, you are also wrong. There is someone, a reader for every writer, I swear. And men like to watch and women like to read, because women want to feel like they are her. I get messages all the time. I'm living vicariously through Layton is her name.
Yes.
And it's, that's why, because they're going through what she's going through, and it's amazing at times and dramatic at others, and it's the escape. I read that, I think there's 7-figure fiction, the one about the butter. Just add the butter, especially in romance, is important. What do we all fantasize about? Billionaire romance is not going to go anywhere, because everybody fantasizes about being rich or being with someone who can take care of you. You don't have to work anymore, and the fantasies are everywhere, and you just need to work them into your plot, whether you're writing romance or not. There is something that will resonate with a reader. You just have to find out what it is that you are also excited to write about. Not just, okay, they like mafia, but I don't care about that, but I'll write it. No, they'll notice. And then you'll burn out, and then you won't want to write about it anymore. So it's definitely
500,000 words in, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't just come out. 500,000 words has to come from places.
Yeah, so
you obviously want to keep it going too.
It took me a year to write one novel, the one behind me actually, and then I've written basically 5 in a year and a half. I mean, that's because I'm getting that motivation from that. I don't just have to motivate myself. Being a writer is so solitary, and you have good days and bad days, and some days you're on fire, and some days you're like, why bother? Imposter syndrome. Who am I? Why am I writing? And so it's when you have other people are like, are you out of your mind? Are you not going to drop an episode? I pulled over the side of the road to read it. And I'm like, whoa, okay, then I'll get right back on that. So they're like, so when something happens at the nightclub, then I make a little promo that says nightclub is closed. And then they're like, oh my gosh, and what happened in the episode is the reason why it's closed. And they're putting it on their Instagram. I'm trying to hit all the feels and make it feel as real to them as I can. And it's the escape, but it's also the fantasy. And it's also your passion will show if you are also excited about your story as well. And like you said, you don't have to interact and talk about like where you live or how many pets you have, anything like that. It can just be about this episode put me through the ringer, and oh my gosh, you guys aren't even prepared for the next one. Or, you know, I say stuff like that all the time, or I'll be like, Gage is laughing at you guys and all your comments. And Gage is the character, even though I'm the one writing Gage, they still think that he's laughing in my head. It just, again, makes it feel just as many emotions as you can evoke, the better. And it, good or bad. They say they only want happy times, but they want the angst and the drama too, because that makes the happier times even better. So definitely listen to your fans. And that's why I'm going to concentrate on the ones I have and not the ones that I could have on Amazon. I'm going to concentrate the ones that are paying me monthly for these bonus scenes. I wrote 2 bonus scenes for free and I put them on to entice them. And that's how I got a lot of them to commit to a subscription too, is by giving them a taste of what they would get and then making it as available as I could. And then saying, okay, but if you want more, and if you want to vote on what happens on the next one, then you should subscribe. I made a $6 tier just for the bonus scenes. And that's all it includes, because some of them are just here for that, and that is fine with me. And so I did start out at $10, but then I made it a $6 tier for the bonus scenes strictly.
Because the $10 tier has not only the bonus scenes but the work in progress.
Yeah,
so just if you want.
Yeah. Just if you're just there to read from the professor's point of view, and you don't care about backlist or your name in the acknowledgments or free ebook or anything, then yeah, that's a tier for you. And I've got quite a few on that one. It's been wild and it's been very fast the past few months, and I'm enjoying it. I am not taking it for granted, because it could just all just float away, and I don't know if it will or won't, or if this is as good as it gets. That's fine too. But I've made friends too out of my fans, and that's just gold.
No, I don't think it'll float away. It's interesting because there are a few things. One, like,
that's that imposter syndrome of me talking. It's just
no, I feel you. It's a common, I would be thinking the same thing, to be honest, but taking an outside perspective, because I'm talking to you and I'm not you at the moment. Like, I feel like, yes, it is very possible that potentially the surge in readership that you're seeing could drop. The surge, the growth can slow, the growth may even up. But in the future, one, if you keep, now here's the thing, you now have relationships with your existing readers. They're just not going to go away, especially the people who are on your subscription now. Those people are paying you monthly. A lot of them are going to stay. Some will drop off over time, but a lot of them will stay. And you get to continue focusing on them, serving them, and I'll keep getting you paid. And then eventually, there's going to be something that hits with a wider group of readers too.
Mm-hmm.
How much wider? I don't know. But it will. And that's why it'll just keep happening. Now, I hope with the current year on just keeps going. That'd be great. But undoubtedly, there will be dips. There will be higher highs. And there will be more dips. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But you have that consistent base now. Your super fans. I don't think your super fans just abandon you.
No.
Or leave you. Especially when you're listening to them and creating something that they love. If you would hurt their trust and damage their trust continuously, you could lose anyone, of course, but you're not going to do that, because you're already knowing what they want, listening to them, writing more. Like, so I'm not worried for you on that, but it's definitely a common thing. But because I've enjoyed this way too much, and you have to get on with the rest of your day. Let's go for
like, oh my god, I took up so much of your time, but it was so much fun.
No, you should get on the rest of your day. I'm fine. I enjoyed this. I'm sorry, because I usually record these podcasts not this long, but this is great. I'm always listening, enjoying. But I want to just do two rapid fire questions. One, after launching your subscription, what is something that you either wish you did differently or some advice you give to others? And the last question will just be where we can find you.
Okay. What would I do differently about my subscription? About launching it or maintaining it or? You're like, yeah.
Anything that comes to mind.
I followed the advice, and so I really didn't run into anything where I was like, oh, I messed up there. I kept the advice of only what I could commit to. Over promise, under promise, over deliver. I always mess it up. So I kept to that. Things that I haven't really changed on my subscription. I don't want to say I knocked it out of the park or anything like that. I certainly didn't. I put my works in progress on there to see if they were interested in my other stuff. They're not. Good to know. A little disappointed, but that's okay. That just means that I'm doing something right with the other story. And for the subscription, I would just definitely start very small and even just offer just like one tier. I offered four, but that's because one of them is outrageous. The one is $125 a month. And that's for me to customize a story for you. But don't tell your readers what they can and cannot afford. That's why I started with the $10 a month, because I remember hearing that advice over and over. And so if you value your work at $3, $5 and up, start there. I started at 10, and most of the comparable authors I was looking at were starting at 5. And it was like, oh, this is ambitious. Who do I think I am starting at 10? And it was like, it's $3 per works in progress. Put it out there. I waited until I had that security of having fans ready to go that I think that we're going to be interested. You do not need to do that. It's just, if you, again, with the experiment, put out your newsletter. The thing about newsletter people, they're used to you getting your blocks, your books all in one sitting. And so they're not going to be as hot as an audience as like the Radish readers who are getting it eye dropped to them every week. And so you need to start putting them in your newsletter maybe every week and just making your own serial out of that. And I wish I could have done that, warmed them up to it. I really just blasted it on me like, I have a subscription now, you should join. But I don't think anyone did. I think maybe one out of the 3,000 subscribers I have maybe joined. And I suggest just having this one thing that you're going to offer, putting it on your subscription, and then looking for that audience. Find a platform where they are. You know where they are. If they're romance, you know where they are. If it's lit RPG, and you can find them. And then just make sure that they know that you're real, that you're not just this story on an app. And you don't need to get personal, and you don't need to interact in the way I do. But the more real you can make this story, and the fact that you're a real person that's writing it, you're like a celebrity to them, like I said in the beginning. And they want to talk to you. They really do. And way more than you think. Like I said, it was ghost town up until I offered those polls. And then they were like, oh, so I guess she wants to interact. Cool, so do I. And now I've got many fans that want to interact every single episode. And even though it takes a lot of time, I respond to all of them because it's still not out of control. Like Amelia has thousands. And so responding to thousands of comments is not viable, but for me it is. And it just helps feed the fandom even more. And for your subscription, start small, very small, only what you can, like, I can do that and more, but I'm just going to say I'm going to do that. Because you don't want to overwhelm yourself. And then once you have a subscription, another bonus I thought was, I have a built-in street team. I didn't ask anybody beta read, I didn't ask anybody to review, but now they want to, even though that most of them get the book for free once it releases, they still want to buy it on Amazon. I remember Amelia saying that and I was like, that's silly. If I'm already paying $10 a month, why would I also pay for the ebook? That's how much they love me as an author and how happy I make them, and they want to support me. And it's like really humbling. And start small, and listen to your readers. And then you can also say, no, that's not what he wants to do. I say it in the context of the characters. Oh, he should have done this. And I'll be like, oh, he says that's a definite, that's a hard no. And that, so instead of me saying, I'm not going to write that, or I'm not going to go with that idea. Oh, the character says, nice try, but next time. And then they think it's funny, and then they're like, oh my gosh, he's so ridiculous. Make it as real as you can. I guess if for the story, that's my advice for that. And for the subscription, find out what they want. I guess it's all about finding out what they want and then giving it to them. And you might think that they want these big, gloriously decadent book boxes. And maybe a couple of them do, but unless you're into that, don't offer it. Just give them what they want. It's usually just more of the characters. Just more of them is usually what they want. And so if you're into it, they're into it. And then if you find out exactly what they want, go with it for at least a little while until have another idea, move into something else. So I'm all about the fan service.
No, it's amazing. And I totally agree with first starting with what are you passionate about, what do you want to write about, what story gets you going, and then from there, figuring out, okay, what do other people want to read?
Then throw in the butter, the fantasy.
Yeah, you always need that, especially when writing. Really, any world that you want your readers to get lost in and not want to end, that's got to be something that makes them, they're in it and they're like,
they never want to leave. It's an amazing feeling. You've created a world that people don't want to leave. Just like any other long running show, Grey's Anatomy and the ones that people, Supernatural. Now people, you know, go to the convention because that show is over, but it's still real if they can go to the convention. And just once you set up a world that people don't want to leave, you should stay in it as long as you can. And you look at me.
And coming from a Moonstone, if you're a Moonstone, like Barrett has given the best advice, because that's exactly what you do. You set up a world, you make everything about the world, make them never leave it. That's why you're a Moonstone. I'm glad you got Moonstone on that quiz.
I know. Now that's I have like Chrisley University sweatshirts. You know, it's my fake university.
And yes.
Now my fans are like, I want a sweatshirt. And they're like, oh, now we're getting into the merch era.
I feel that. I like when it's authentic like that. When authors are like, what should I make merch about? I'm like, maybe you should not make merch. And that sounds harsh, but it's like, unless something feels really authentic and like it aligns with what your story is about, maybe your readers are already asking for it. That's how, okay. I should make merch about it. But if no one's asked you yet, you're still puzzling, like, just keep writing. I'm not saying that I'm denigrating. Like, that's what your best time is spent doing anyways. It'll come with time, and then it'll be something that you're excited about. And not saying that's just, like, a way to make extra money, although, yeah, like, for certain, you can. But it'll be something that's like, oh, wow, like, I want to wear this now, too. And, like, my readers seem like they do. Like, why do I just create it? Which seems, like, too simple, but, like, I don't know. I feel like that's the approach. You don't have to overthink it.
I think I heard on our podcast earlier, it's so hard to think as just a reader because you're such a writer, right? Some writers, I would never want to, like you said, participate in a poll, but that's you. And it's probably you as a writer in it. And there could be other readers that feel the way, but you need to think like the reader. If my favorite author or actor or any creator, musician was like, hey, thank you so much, Verica. That was awesome. In fact, my favorite line in this song, in this movie, and this is this, I would freak out. So you have to think of it like a fan. And even though I feel like I am nobody and I'm not a celebrity by any means, but to like my fan in Greece, I can't do any wrong. She wants all the books, all the things, all the bonuses, all the merch. I have a ridiculously super fan, and she makes my day every day, and it's amazing, and I can't emphasize how much it is to cultivate that little community, no matter how small it is, 2 people, 200. In fact, I get overwhelmed thinking about if I ever got to 2,000, right? But authors sending out these book boxes, making millions, that's their world, and that's their journey, and you get to that. Just don't concentrate that in the beginning. There's so many other things to think about.
In the beginning, you're not even thinking about that. But also, I will say, like, if you do get to 2,000, like, ways to make it much less.
Exactly. It's a good problem. Still a great experience
for your fans. There's always a way to keep everything going and make it even better. And yeah, no, this is, You're awesome, Erica. I seriously love this.
Oh, thank you for having me on here, though. It's awesome. I love talking about my 0 to 100 story just with Amelia's advice and subscription for authors. And Reem, that's where my subscription is. You can find me on reemstories.com/vsloan. My website is vericasloan.com. I'm on like Facebook and stuff, but I'm not like super, super active on there. My fans are on Radish and they're on Reem, and I like the advice of find that platform and master that one. I have mastered Radish now. So that's great. I don't want to be on Wattpad or World Road. I don't have that time. I have a full-time job. Can't wait till this is my
first. There's a lot going on. No, I'm with you. You're amazing, Berica. I'm so excited to see what 2024 has in store for you. And it means a lot for you taking this time out to stay with us, because I know people really like this episode. This one was special. And that's because you're very special.
No, thank you very much. It's a blast. I hope somebody takes something away from all my rambling. I really do. I want someone to message me like, I listened to that and I did this thing, this one little thing that you said, and it made a difference. Yeah, that would make my day. I want more. I want to spread.
That's a call to action, everyone. Implement Verica's advice. Tell Verica that you did it and everyone will be happy.
Please, don't be shy. I want to know. And then I want to gush about it with you, because now I love interacting with whoever about subscriptions. I have told other authors about it and about Reem, and I am really excited to see where Reem's going to be this time next year.
It's going to be a very fun year for us. Verica, thanks again for this amazing conversation.
Thank you.
And that is it for this podcast. I hope you enjoyed. A huge thank you to Verica for coming on. She's like such an inspiration. Seriously, such an inspiration. And like I said in the beginning, if y'all want to join the 1 Million Reads Serial Lab, you can find it in the description. It's a really awesome, awesome course where you actually get to work directly with Amelia, get some office hours with her, get feedback from the team on how to actually write and grow your serial. So I hope you enjoy that. And I hope you've been enjoying this podcast. We have some awesome interviews coming up, some amazing episodes. So I hope to see y'all soon. In the meantime, have an amazing rest of your day. And don't forget, storytellers rule the world.